of connectedness. Ashby, Rosemary, Sissix called from within the heap. Come say hello. She wriggled one of her hands free and pointed a claw towards all the elderly heads. Sissix's feathers were by far the brightest of the bunch. This is Issash, Ethra, Rixic, Ithren, Kirix, Shas, Trikesh, Rasek, and a few I don't know. She laughed and switched to Reskitkish, addressing the old woman hugging her the closest. You've added some faces since I was last here. The old woman, Issash, Rosemary thought, though she knew she'd never be able to keep them all straight, said, We stole a couple of them from the Saracet family at a frolic last winter. She leaned toward Sissix conspiratorially. It's because everybody knows I'm the best-looking elder in the region. The other Andrisks laughed. One of them tugged her feathers. She grinned with mock arrogance. Sissix laughed and nuzzled Issash's cheek. I've missed you so much, she said. One of the male elders wiggled his way free of the pile. His eyes were sharp, but his feathers drooped with age, and his scales were dull. Rosemary got the impression that he was very old. I'd like you to join us, he said with a smile, but I know that's not your way. He reached out his hand to shake Ashby's. Ashby, how are you? I am glad to see you again. Ashby cleared his throat and answered as best he could. Glad to see you, Ishren. Thank you for the... for being... welcome. Ishren's smile grew wider, and he touched Ashby's forearm. Your Reskitkish is very good, he said. Not very, Ashby said. I speak less than I know to hear, he spoke in clip. No, hang on. Ishren laughed. Oh, you understand more than you can say. See? I can understand you just fine. He patted Ashby's arm and turned to Rosemary. Do you speak Reskitkish? He asked as he shook her hand. Rosemary shook her head apologetically. He pointed at her HUD. But you understand. She started to nod, but then remembered the curved gesture Sissix had shown her down by the creek, hands speak for yes. Ishren was delighted. See, you are learning fast, and I am like Ashby. I understand Clip, but I am not confident in speaking it. So as long as you are wearing your HUD, we can each speak what we're comfortable with and understand the other just fine. He put one of his hands on Rosemary's shoulder and did the same to Ashby. I enjoy seeing humans here. When I was a little younger than Sissix, I crewed aboard an Aelion cargo carrier. Aelion Run, that is. It was a multi-species crew, like yours. We even had a Laru woman, believe it or not. Damned clever species, the Laru. Never saw anyone who could play ticket like her. But, what was I saying? I don't know, Ashby said, giving the Reskitkish another try. About humans? Ah, yes, yes. I'll never forget the day when we learned humans had been accepted into the GC as a member species. We were at the Muriat Marketplace. Have you ever been there? Sometimes, Ashby said. Is there still a bar there called Hanto, the fully stocked cupboard? Don't know. Oh, I hope it's still there. Best sugar snaps in the GC, no question. I've never found another bartender who can get them that tart. Anyway, yes, humans joining the GC. I was at an algae depot. No, it was a tech shop. Yes, a tech shop. There was a human man working there. His job was to clean used parts meant for resale. Mindless work and hard, too. Not a good job for a species with soft hands. You could tell by his clothes that he didn't get paid much. His boss was out, so he was helping me find... Oh, whatever it was I needed. There was a news feed on a little projector at his work desk, and suddenly, there it was. Humans in the GC. The man went quiet. And then he did something I've never seen before. He started crying. Now, I didn't know that crying was something that humans did, so I was a little afraid. Do you know how disturbing it is to see someone's eyes start leaking? Oh, and poor man, he's trying to explain crying to me while going through all of those emotions. I'll never forget what he said to me. He said, "This means we matter. We're worth something." And I said, "Of course you're worth something. Everyone is worth something." And he said, "But now I know the galaxy thinks so too." Ishren squeezed their shoulders and looked between them. "And now you have ships of your own, and you go out into the open like we Andrisks do. And to the core. I must admit, I am jealous of your journey. What a lucky thing that is." He smiled. "I hope I don't sound patronizing, but thinking back on that man, seeing you here, makes me think on how far your species has come. That makes me very happy." "Oh, I just remembered. Are you hungry? I know that humans have to eat more than we do. So Rixic and I spent last night preparing plenty of extra food for the..." Noun. No analog available. A table where communal food is offered throughout the day. "That's kind. Very kind," Ashby said. "I wish... I hope it were not difficult."
"Not at all," Ishrin said. "We are all looking forward to seeing how much you can eat."
He grinned and pointed off to the side.
"I think they are, too."
Behind a stack of empty crates, a pack of hatchlings had gathered, watching the adults with intense curiosity. They were hanging back, as if waiting to be invited. Rosemary realized that might actually be the case. Perhaps they knew not to butt in when adults were socializing. That would make sense. Among a species where children did not need help learning basic survival skills. In a human gathering, adults wouldn't think twice about dropping a conversation the moment a child needed something, even if it was simply attention. But here, the hatchlings seemed to know that adult activities took precedence, and that if they wanted to join in, they'd have to figure out the rules. So instead of tugging at sleeves and showing off, they observed the goings-on of adults from the sidelines, trying to puzzle it all out. They were learning how to be people. Rosemary saw Tetris among them, her little arms wrapped around a hatchling of similar size and features. Eskat, presumably. Sisic's other... Rosemary stopped herself before thinking the word child. Offspring? Progeny? All the words granted too much of a connotation of those hatchlings belonging to Sisix, which they clearly did not, or at least not in a human way. Perhaps it was enough to say that Tetris and Eskat shared an egg mother, who happened to be Sisix. Her attention swayed back to the cuddle heap, which was beginning to disintegrate. Three of the elders, one Sisix had not known the names of, were heading back to the house. A few stayed with Sisix, still touching, but their energy was waning. Issash, however, continued to hug Sisix as tightly as she had at the start. Two of Sisix's other hatch parents, apparently overcome by the affection, had left the group for a nearby bench. There could be no doubt that they had moved on to actual foreplay, and in one brief, unexpected moment, all of Rosemary's idle curiosities about what a male Andrisk kept inside the slit between his legs were answered.
"Come,"
Ishren said, leading Rosemary and Ashby towards the homestead.
"Let's take care of you two. And you know, you don't have to wear clothes here, unless you want to. I know it's your way, but we want you to be comfortable."
"Thank you," Rosemary said in Clip. She did her best to avert her gaze from the Andrisk elders on the bench, who are now coupling with Gusto. I think I'll keep them on for now. The way the day progressed, Rosemary felt sorry for the Tex, crowded into some concert pit with greasy food and overpriced kick. Her own afternoon was spent lying on floor cushions, drinking grass wine, and eating strange, delicious nibbles from the communal table. The elders had little frame of reference for how much humans needed to eat, and had provided enough food for 10 of them. She listened as Sissek's family caught their hatch daughter up on the daily dramas of friends and relatives. Everything about the gathering was intriguing, from the unfamiliar food to the obsessive level of detail given to local gossip, to the unending physical affection lavished upon Sissek's. In many ways, Rosemary felt like the hatchlings, peeking through windows and slipping in to fill bowls with snacks. She, too, was content to watch and learn. But by evening, Rosemary had grown a little restless. She had eaten herself sluggish, thanks to Ishran's urgings, and the effect of the wine had shifted from pleasantly relaxed to mild headache. Her legs were stiff from lying around, and her brain felt like goo after several hours of listening to conversations in an unfamiliar language. Shortly after the sun went down, she excused herself and went outside for some air. Theth dominated the desert sky, hanging close enough for her to imagine that she could reach out and brush its rings with her fingertips. Without the haze of city lights, shimmering colors shone down unhindered. The glow of neighboring moons, the murky purple gauze of the galactic cloud, and all in between, nothing but stars, stars, stars. She lived up there, in that vast expanse of color. Every day, she saw planets and comets and stellar nurseries right up close, plain as weather. Yet, there was something about being planetside that made it feel different. Perhaps stars were supposed to be viewed from the ground. She glanced inside at Sissek's, surrounded by a throng of feathered heads. She looked back to the sky, guiltily entertaining the idea of everyone but Sissek's disappearing for a while. She imagined Sissek's coming outside, handing her another glass of wine, putting her arm round her shoulder, teaching her the names of constellations. It was a silly, selfish thought, she knew, but she indulged it all the same. A short while later, Ashby stepped out of the doorway, carrying a heat blanket. "Thought you might be cold." "I am a bit, thanks." She took the blanket and pulled it round her shoulders. A soft warmth spread like sunlight through her clothes. "Oh, pretty great, right? Why do I not have one of these?" Ashby laughed. "I bought one a few years back, right after I made that same face you're making. I'm sure we can get one before we leave." "Yes, please." "The elders couldn't believe you'd need a blanket." "Why?" "Ah, because I'm warm-blooded." "Right," she laughed. "Everything okay?" "Oh, yeah, absolutely. I just needed a little fresh air." "Yeah, I know. These things can be a bit much after a while. But have you had a good time?"
"I've had a great time. I'm really glad I came."
"Good. Tell Sissek's that too. It'll make her happy." Rosemary smiled, but thought again of the several hours she'd spent watching Sissek's being petted and pampered by a loving family. How cold and rigid life on the Wayfarer was in comparison. Sissek's deserved better than that. Ashby cocked his head at her.
"What is it?"
"I don't know if I can put it into words. It's just..." She thought, "How does she do it?"
"Do what?"
"Get by without a feather family."
"Sissek's has a feather family."
Rosemary blinked. A long-distance relationship with a feather family? Given the closeness she'd just witnessed? She couldn't see how that would work. "She's never said anything about them."
Ashby smirked. "When you have a minute in private, Pull up her ID file. As ship's clerk, you should have access to it.
Late that night, curled up in her guest room, Rosemary did just that. ID number 7789-0045-268. GC designated name, Sissix Seshkethet. Emergency contact, Ashby Santoso. Next of kin, Isash Seshkethet. GC designated. Local name, if applicable, Oshet Seshkethet Esk Saskist As Eshresh Sissix Isket Vesh Kriset. Rosemary chewed her lip as she studied the words on her scrib. Seshkethet was obvious. Saskist was Sissix's mother, and Eshresh sounded like a name, which meant he was probably her father. Vesh Kriset, however, was unfamiliar. She pulled up the official Andrisk family database. Somewhere out there, there was a team of archivists whose sole purpose was to follow Andrisk family drama and track the changes accordingly. She felt exhausted just thinking about it. The letters on the screen shifted as her scrib translated the text into clip. "Please choose a family name," it read. "Vesh Kriset," she said, hoping the database could understand her poor accent. A listing popped up. Rosemary's brow furrowed. The Vesh Kriset feather family had only one member. Sissix. She leaned back into the nest of blankets. Sissix was in a feather family by herself. That didn't make any sense. Sissix was the walking definition of gregariousness, and Andrisks didn't view loners kindly. Declaring yourself the sole member of a feather family would be an act of defiance, a signal that you didn't want anything to do with other Andrisks. Rosemary remembered how Sissix had reacted to the old woman back on Port Coriel, how she had dropped everything to give a stranger a few moments of company. Being alone and untouched, there's no punishment worse than that. No, it didn't fit at all. She looked out the window. A thought flickered by. The database was Andrisk-made, and from what Sissix had said, its most practical purpose was to prevent inbreeding. If that was the case, would other species appear on the list? "Scrib, translate," she said. "Specify language path," the scrib said. "Reskitkish to Klip." "Reskitkish to Kliptorgan, confirmed. Please speak the word or phrase you want to translate. If you cannot pronounce it, Vesh Kriset." A brief pause. "No definitive match found. Would you like a linguistic analysis to help determine possible matches?" "Yes." The suffix et implies a proper noun. This suffix is commonly used to denote an Andrisk family group. Do you wish to search the Andrisk family data? "No," Rosemary said. She thought. "Remove the suffix from the search phrase and search again." Another pause. "Vesh Krisk, noun. A person on a journey. Traveler. Wanderer. Wayfarer." Sissix propped her chin up on her fist, watching Hashkath get smaller and smaller through the window in her quarters. Somewhere down there, her Hatch family was laughing, coupling, fighting, cooking, cleaning, feeding the hatchlings. Her skin was still shining from Kyrix's homemade scale scrub. The palm-sized snap fruit tarts Isash had sent back with her were still just a little bit warm in the center. She didn't want to leave. She loved the Wayfarer, and she loved the people aboard it, mostly, but she always forgot how hard it was being away from other Andrisks until she spent time back home. It was more than just missing the smell of the desert grass or being able to fall back into Reskitkish. It was that people there understood. As dear as her crewmates were, constantly having to explain cultural differences, to bite back a friendly remark that might offend alien ears, to hold her hands still when she wanted to touch someone, it all grew tiring.
And while visiting home was a welcome salve for her homesickness, the thing she always, always forgot was that for a short while after leaving Hashcath again, being away was even harder. It was as if she'd stuck a knife into herself when she'd first left home. Nowhere vital, just her thigh or perhaps a forearm. The longer she stayed away, the more the wound healed, until she often forgot it was there. Returning always pulled the scab right off. Still, perhaps it was better that way. If she stopped caring about her Hatch family, being away wouldn't hurt. But cutting those ties was unimaginable. Besides, without leaving, she never would have met all the friends she'd made elsewhere. Perhaps the ache of homesickness was a fair price to pay for having so many good people in her life. Someone knocked on the door. "Come in," she called. There, another thing to go on the list of alien annoyances, the assumption of locked doors. It had been so nice to be without that feeling for a day. Rosemary walked in, carrying a bottle of wine and two cups. Something about her scent was different. She had taken a shower recently, but there was something else there, something subtle that Sissix couldn't quite pinpoint. She'd noticed it before, though in a less prominent way. It reminded her, inexplicably, of being in a bar. Maybe it was just the wine. Unraveling smells within the sealed walls of the ship was always more difficult after becoming acclimated to planetside air. It was the difference between locating objects spread out across a table and digging for them within a crowded box. "I hope I'm not disturbing," Rosemary said. "Privacy. That was going on the list, too. No, no. I would love some company. And a drink, since I think that's what you're offering." She glanced down at herself, then at her trousers crumpled on the floor. Self-consciousness. Modesty. Screw it. Rosemary had just seen her and her whole Hatch family naked. She'd even been a good sport about a hatchling grabbing her breasts. She doubted that Rosemary was bothered any more by having a clear view of someone's genitals. Rosemary poured the wine. They sat on the floor, falling into an easy chat about nothing of importance. It wasn't until they were each working on their second cup that Rosemary said, "May I ask you a personal question?" Sissix laughed. "I will never understand why people ask that." Rosemary ran her fingers around the rim of her cup, looking a little embarrassed. Sissix thought perhaps she should have refrained from the comment about the personal question, but honestly, humans wasted so much time by being redundant. The human woman cleared her throat. "I found out that we're... the crew, that is your feather family." Had she not told Rosemary that? Maybe not. It wasn't the sort of thing that came up often. "Ashby told you?" "No, he implied. I figured out the rest myself." She took a sip of wine. "I know there are a lot of complicated rules for feather families, and I don't pretend to know any of them. But I was wondering how you categorize crew members that you didn't choose for yourself. I mean, the people who are only here because it's their job."
"You mean Corbin?"
"Yeah, that's complicated. But in feather families, getting stuck with a member you don't like happens all the time. You just recognize that somebody else in your family needs them, and you stay out of their way. It's like Ashby and Corbin. Ashby needs Corbin. Doesn't matter to me that he needs him in a business sense rather than a family sense. Ashby is my family, without a shadow of a doubt. Therefore, Corbin falls within my feather family." She grinned over the edge of her cup. "Though, I certainly wouldn't object if he found a new family elsewhere." Rosemary nodded. "Makes sense. Though, I wasn't asking about Corbin."
"Oh?"
Rosemary was quiet. Sissix had watched human faces for long enough to know that Rosemary was either searching for the right words or for the courage to say them. Sissix was silently grateful for how much time was saved by handspeak.
At last, Rosemary spoke. I was asking about me. The irritation Sissix had been nursing toward Rosemary's entire species weakened. She smiled and took Rosemary's hand. If it were my call, I'd take you in again. You should know by now that I like having you in my family. Rosemary squeezed her fingers. She smiled, but there was something else there, too. Fear, perhaps? What could she possibly be afraid of? Rosemary withdrew her hand and topped up their cups, giving the last few drops to Sissix. After seeing you with your family, your Hatch family, I mean, well, I wondered if maybe it isn't enough for you here. We must make life awfully hard. Being away from Andrisk's can be hard, and I'd be a liar if I said I wasn't feeling kicked in the guts right now. But I'm here by choice. I love this ship. I love our crew. I have a good life. I wouldn't change it. Rosemary's eyes swung up, looking through her dark lashes. There was a different look in them now. Something strong, grounded. But no one touches you. Sissix almost choked on her wine as she realized what was going on. All this time with humans, and still there were things that didn't occur to her until after the fact. The details rushed at her at once. The look in Rosemary's eyes, the wine, the shy pauses that shifted into a low-voiced directedness. Her clothes. Oh, stars, Rosemary had changed her clothes since they'd got back to the ship. Humans read meanings into different kinds of clothes, but it was a complicated business, and Sissix had never got the hang of it. Rosemary was wearing a pair of soft, flowing trousers, and a pale yellow top held up by a crisscross of strings. Casual, Sissix thought, but festive. The sort of thing one of Kizzy's friends might wear to a party on a hot summer night. The top of the shirt dipped down below Rosemary's usual collar line, showing the upper curves of her breasts. And her hair. She'd done something to it. Sissix couldn't say what exactly, but effort had been made there. And with having had time for her nose to parse Rosemary's intricacies, she knew now that the change in her scent had nothing to do with wine, or soap, or clean clothes. It wasn't anything from an external source. It was hormones. Sissix had seen human vids. She'd seen how Kizzy fussed over herself before going out to dock bars. She'd seen Ashby staring at himself in reflective surfaces before he met Pei, absently nudging at his hair or trimming the scruff on his face. Rosemary had come to her quarters in pretty clothes, with wine and kind words and hair that had had something done to it. This was a human's elaborate way of asking something that an Andrisk could ask with nothing more than a slight flick of her fingers. Rosemary continued to speak. Sissix, I don't have any feathers I can give you. I wish I did. You made me feel welcome when I first set foot on this ship. And since then, the kindness you've shown, not just to me, but to everyone, has meant more than I can say. You go out of your way to make everybody aboard this ship comfortable, to show us affection in the way that we expect it. I don't pretend to know Andrisks as well as you know humans, but there are some things I understand. I understand that we're your family. And that for you, not being able to touch us means there's a vital piece missing. I think that feeling hurts you, and I think you've buried it deep. I saw the look on your face when your family held you. You may love the Wayfarer, but life here is incomplete. She pressed her lips together. They came back wet. I don't know how you see me, but I want you to know that if you should want something more, I'd like to give it to you. Sissix cupped her palm, flipped it, and spread her claws, even though she knew Rosemary would not understand the gesture. Tresha. It was the thankful, humble, vulnerable feeling that came after someone saw truth in you. something they had discovered just by watching, something that you did not admit often to yourself. If Rosemary had been an Andrisk, Sissix would have knocked the cups aside and started coupling right then and there. But she remained cautious. Apparently, the part of her that understood humans was still at the helm. "Rosemary," Sissix said, taking her hand. She was so warm. Other species always were. She could feel it just standing by them, but it was all the more present now. She had sometimes wondered what it would be like to have that warmth pressing against... No, she was not thinking about that. Not yet. She had to be smart. She had to be careful. After all, humans reacted differently to coupling than she did. Didn't their brains get overloaded with chemicals afterwards, way more than normal people? Andrisks bonded through coupling too, but humans could get crazy over it. How else could you explain a sapient species that had overpopulated itself to the point of environmental collapse? This was a people that had coupled themselves stupid. I'm grateful, Sissix said at last. What a horrible, hollow way to describe how she was feeling. Tresha. That was the right explanation, but there was no word for it in Clip. Useless language. Rosemary's face fell slightly, as if she had been expecting Sissix to knock aside the cups. Damn it! Why hadn't this been covered in interspecies sensitivity courses? Are you... Think, Sissix, think. Are you saying me this because you feel sorry for me, or is it something you want? Oh, Clip was always too practical or too emotional. Never a middle ground. Useless, useless language. Rosemary took a sip of wine and contemplated her cup. Well, I am attracted to you. You're a wonderful person and a very good friend. I'm not sure when I started feeling more than that for you. Which isn't a problem, by the way, if your answer is no. I do like being your friend, and I'll be happy if that's all we are. She took another sip. But, to be honest, I probably wouldn't have said anything about it if I hadn't seen your Hatch family. My own feelings aside, you need something like that, and not just when you happen upon other Andrisks. Her eyes swung back up again, dark and honest. If not from me, then from someone. You deserve it. Just say yes, a little voice inside Sissix begged. Say yes, Sissix. She's right. Rosemary, I want to say yes. I do. She thought back to the shy, new clerk who had come aboard less than a standard ago. Who was this woman with the serious eyes? The woman who spoke her mind so bravely. What had she discovered out here in the open? Sissix took a breath. But I don't want to hurt you. Coupling's different for us, I think. I'm flattered that you want to give me something I need, but I don't know if I can give you what you need. Rosemary gave a little smirk, the same kind Jenks gave Kizzy when she'd said something absurd. Sissix, I'm not asking you to marry me. I'm not in love with you. I like you. I like who you are, and how you are. And I like the way your feathers fall across the curve of your head. I understand that you don't limit yourself to one person. I understand that our notions of family are different, and that they probably won't fit together down the road. But I'd like to be part of your notion for a while. All the same. Curiosity. Now there was a concept Sissix understood. I think I'd like that, too, Sissix said. The warning voice within her was dying, but it wasn't about to go out without a fight. But there are things you need to understand. All right, Rosemary said. There was a brightness in her eyes, a hopefulness. Sissix found herself melting. This could be a very lovely thing. Family members,
as I'm sure you noticed, aren't just about sex. We cuddle and touch and hold each other all the time. If coupling is too much to ask, if it were to, what was the proper way to say, overload your crazy mammal brain, to make you feel uncomfortable, or to make you want more from me than I can give you, I would also be okay with just being close. Like you saw with my family, even that would be enough. It'd be a big improvement from the current status quo, for sure. Rosemary nodded. I'll keep that option in mind, but I don't think there will be a problem. And we don't have to act that way around the others, if that would make you more comfortable. We don't even have to tell them. Sissix didn't care about the others finding out, but if Rosemary could make cultural concessions out of kindness, she could return the favor. Rosemary considered this and nodded. I think that might be better, at least to start, she said. Sissix paused. The next thing, she knew, was not an idea most humans took to with ease. If we were planetside, and I met other Andrisks, I wouldn't mind you going to a tet, Rosemary said. Just don't expect me to come along. It wouldn't be because they were more important than you, Sissix said quickly, or because I liked being with Andrisks better. Sissix, Rosemary said. She squeezed Sissix's hand and did something that no one had ever done before. She raised Sissix's fingers to her mouth and pressed her lips against the knuckles just once, letting them linger for a moment. Sissix had been given kisses before from Kizzy and Jenks and Ashby, fast, dry brushes against her cheek. This was different. It was slower, softer. It was an odd feeling, a soft feeling. She liked it. Rosemary pulled her lips back and smiled. I get it. Stars, she really did. There's one more thing, Sissix said. She noticed that her voice had sunk lower. Something else was piloting her brain now. The part of her who was no stranger to tets and couplings. The part of her who was shouting with joy that finally, at last, someone in her family understood. She met Rosemary's eyes and gave an embarrassed laugh. I've never coupled with a human. Rosemary grinned. That's good, she said. She leaned in, running a smooth fingertip along the length of one of Sissix's feathers. I'd hate for you to have an unfair advantage.
Day 45, GC Standard 307, October 25th.
So, Ashby said, can you fix it?
Jenks inspected the exposed insides of Ashby's scrib with the attention of a surgeon.
I can tweak it, he said, but it won't be a permanent fix. You need a new pixel array. Easy enough for me to hook up, but I don't have one on hand.
But you can get it to stop hopping between feeds?
Yeah. The picture might start to degrade after a couple of 10 days, but it won't... Wait.
Uh-oh. Jenks paused.
You hear that?
Ashby listened. Raised voices down the hall, coming from the algae bay. He sighed.
Not again.
Jenks rolled his eyes.
I swear they'd save so much time if one of them just spaced the other already.
They followed the voices, which was easy enough to do. Pieces of the argument made their way to his ears as they got closer.
Absolutely incompetent!
That was Corbin.
Weren't such a pain in the ass, Sissix. No regard for my work here. Just communicate like a fucking functional adult, then maybe. I did communicate. It's just that your thick lizard ears won't... Damn it, Corbin!
Ashby quickened his step.
Hisk, ashek, tisk, saw, hiss.
Ah, yes. Hiss all you want. It still doesn't change the fact that I'm... Enough,
Ashby said, entering the room. Jenks hung back in the doorway, far enough to be polite, but close enough to get a good view.
Ashby, Sissek said, feathers on end, you tell this pompous, speciest asshole that...
I said that's enough. Ashby glared at them both. Now, I want to know what this is all about. Corbin and Sissek began yelling in tandem. Ashby put up his hands.
One at a time. Your pilot,
Corbin said, in the same tone that an angry father might say, your child, to his partner,
pushed the induction lines past capacity. It put too much strain on one of my pressure caps, and now look.
Ashby looked to the fuel distributor. He couldn't see the problem, but the green goo in a small number of tubes was lying still.
I had no idea that he had swapped out the cap for a lesser model.
Sissek shot Corbin a murderous look, and I still don't understand why he did it at all.
I swapped it out because it was the only part I had on hand. In case you haven't noticed, we haven't had any market stops in a while. It was either make do with a lesser model or replace the entire apparatus, which is what I'll have to do anyway, thanks to you.
Yes, it's my fault, because you actually bothered to tell me about any of this.
Oh, no, wait, you didn't. I brought this up in the kitchen day before yesterday. You weren't talking to me. You were bitching about your lab to Dr. Chef. How the fuck was I supposed to know that it had anything to do with my ability to fly the... In other words, you chose to ignore me. Perhaps if you'd pay a little more attention to the needs of others, instead of acting so self-involved, then...
Stop, Ashby said. He took a deep breath. Let me make sure I'm hearing this correctly. This argument, which we could hear coming down the stairs, is all because of a minor incident involving a damaged pressure cap?
It's hardly minor. This is going to take me all day to...
It's minor, Ashby repeated. You lost one apparatus out of six. Fuel is still pumping, right? Corbin scowled.
Yes, but it's a matter of...
Okay. So, in the future, you, he pointed at Corbin, need to tell Sissek about any equipment changes you make, because you cannot expect her to be physically aware of what goes on in this lab. And you do not use that word aboard my ship. Do you understand? Not to Sissek, not to anyone else. It is completely unacceptable. You apologize to her right now.
I didn't right now.
Corbin's face went even redder.
I'm sorry,
he said to Sissek. His voice was tight as a ceiling band.
And you, Ashby jabbed a finger at Sissek, need to go way easier when making speed jumps, because there's no way that cap should have burned out that fast.
We're running behind, Sissek said. If we don't...
I don't care if we're a 10-day late. I don't care if we're a standard late. I am not going adrift out here, not when we've come this far. Be more careful.
He stared them both down. I am only going to say this one more time. Get over whatever this pissing match is between the two of you. It is driving me crazy. It is driving the rest of your crew crazy. I know this has been a long haul, and I know we're all tired, but I'll be damned if I'm going to fly the rest of the way to the core listening to you two scream at each other. Work it out. If you can't, fake it. I do not want to have this conversation.
The vox snapped on.
Hey, Ashby!
It was Kizzy.
So I kind of need you for something.
Can it wait?
Well, not so much, no. But maybe I could tell him.
Tell who what?
There was a shuffling sound. Rosemary's voice replaced Kizzy's. Ashby, we've got a Quellan enforcer on hold up here. He could hear Kizzy talking in the background.
Do you think I made him mad? I can't tell, because their faces don't move.
Ashby sighed and closed his eyes. Lovey, transfer the call down here. Corbin stepped aside as Ashby took a seat at his desk. The pixels leapt into place. A male Quellen stared back, his armored face inscrutable, his black eyes shining.
This is Captain Ashby Santoso. How can I help you?
This is Enforcer Bevel of the Interstellar Defense Bureau. As is stated in Section 3628 of the Border Security Amendment, you are subject to a full search of your vessel and an inspection of all crew members.
We were already scanned when we entered Quellen space. Have we done anything wrong?
This is a random search. The Interstellar Defense Bureau has the right to search any and all vessels at our discretion, regardless of probable cause.
I trust that my clerk has sent you our tunneling license and flight plan?
We have received the required materials, and your right to travel within our space has been confirmed.
Not to be difficult, but we're on a tight schedule. Do I have the right to refuse this search?
Refusal will result in possible impounding of your vessel and incarceration of all persons aboard. Failure to comply with inspection officers is a violation of our GC membership agreement and is subject to prosecution under Executive Order 22609.
I guess we'll look forward to seeing you on board, then.
Prepare to be boarded in 10 minutes, said Officer Bevel. The pixels scattered as the call ended.
What a charming guy, Jenks said. Bet he's great fun at parties.
Only if he has the proper formwork for it, Ashby said, rubbing the bridge of his nose. Pain in the ass. The freight elevator doors clanked open. Rosemary and Kizzy hopped out.
Is everything okay? Kizzy asked. Did I get us in trouble? I really shouldn't answer calls, ever. I get all stupid.
Nobody's in trouble, but we have to let them do another search.
Why?
Because they said so. And because they're Quellen, and because they're really not the sort of people I want to piss off.
I hear onboard searches are a real pain, Sizzik said.
We were fine on our last search.
Yeah, but that was just a basic scan for weapons and illegal tech. Trust me, they'll search everything. And I hear they do blood screenings, too.
Why blood screenings? Rosemary asked.
Jenks sighed.
Because of that asshole with explosive bots in his blood, I'll bet. Remember that? That dumb speciesist kid a few standards back tried to prove a point during a border search? Didn't even program them right. All he did was blow his own head off.
Funny how it's always the speciesists who ruin things for everybody else, Sizzik said.
Corbin scoffed, but Sizzik headed for the door before he could say anything further.
I'll go get Ohan.
Ashby's eyes shifted between Kizzy and Jenks. Do you two have anything stashed away that might make them freak out?
Anything?
Jenks thought hard.
Don't think so.
Nah, said Kizzy. We drank the last of Bear's homebrew kick last 10 day.
She paused. Her hands shot up to her mouth.
Oh, ass!
What? Ashby said.
She slid her hands up to the top of her head and twisted her hair.
I have a bag of smash in with my socks.
Good thing you thought of it now. Go toss it in the engine.
But
Kizzy's shoulders sagged.
You can't get smash out here. I've been saving it for a special occasion.
Ashby frowned. He was not in the mood for Kizzy reasoning.
This isn't a debate. Toss it in the engine now.
Come on, Kiz, Jenks said. He took her by the wrist and led her back to the freight elevator. Let's go do this awful thing.
I hate the Quellen, she said. They're stupid and jerks, and nobody likes them.
She lowered her voice surreptitiously as they entered the elevator.
If we smoked it now really fast, do you think they'd notice?
I can still hear you, Kizzy, Ashby said.
She pouted.
Can't blame me for trying,
she said as the doors closed.
Rosemary had seen vids of Quellen before, but even so, she was unprepared for the things that came clattering through the cargo bay doors.
She tried to think of a more eloquent descriptor for them, but all she kept coming up with was lobster centaur. Chitinous blue exoskeletons, long horizontal abdomens, segmented torsos covered in jointed limbs, all topped with a mask-like face. Their shells were branded with symbols, studded with polished stones. She knew better than to judge a species by appearances, but between their knobbly looks and the call she'd witnessed earlier, she wasn't warming up to them. The rest of the crew looked uneasy as well, which made her feel a little better. It was common knowledge that Quellen were typically xenophobic, and it was rare to see them anywhere other than in their own space. Their inclusion in the GC was an arrangement of convenience, or so Rosemary had read. The Quellen had huge caches of natural resources at their disposal, and had been originally brought into the GC by the Hermagians, who had plenty of money and fancy tech to offer in exchange. Not that the Quellen and the Hermagians actually liked each other. It was funny how the potential for profit always seemed to trump antipathy. Six Quellen entered the cargo bay, headed by the one from the SIB call, Enforcer Bevel. He doled out commands to his inferiors, or so Rosemary assumed, since she didn't speak Telerane. Four of them left the bay, scanning devices beeping, pointed legs clicking against the metal floor. "Line up and prepare to be scanned," Enforcer Bevel said. So much for introductions. The crew did as they were told. Rosemary ended up beside Sissix. They exchanged a glance. Sissix rolled her eyes and gave her head an irritated shake. Bevel pointed a leg toward Ohan. "What's wrong with them?" Rosemary glanced over. Ohan was shaking. Not violently so, but enough to see from a distance. "They're old and ill," Dr. Sheff said. "Nothing contagious. They have a degenerative nerve condition that makes it difficult for them to stand for an extended period of time." Bevel's eyes were fixed on Ohan, but without eyelids or facial muscles, it was impossible to know what the Quellen was thinking. "They may sit." "Thank you," Ohan said with a nod. They sank to the floor, trying to be as poised as possible. It seemed the Quellen could be reasonable, after all. Bevel shifted his gaze to Dr. Sheff. "We will need to review their medical records in order to confirm your claim." "Okay, maybe not." The other Quellen pulled a device from a bag hanging from her side. "We will now scan your blood, hemolymph, or other primary genetic fluid for contaminants, parthenogens, illegal nanobots, and any other banned or dangerous substances. If you are aware of carrying any such things, let us know at this time." She paused for a reply. No one spoke. "I will now begin the scan." She walked over to Jenks, at the far end of the line. She stared for a few seconds. "You are unusually small. And you have a shitload of legs," Jenks said, holding out his hand. The Quellen said nothing. She pressed the scanner against Jenks's palm. There was a mechanical click. Rosemary heard Jenks suck air through his teeth. The Quellen studied the scanner. Apparently satisfied, she moved on to Ashby. Jenks examined his palm. "What, no bandage or... no? Okay, thanks." The Quellen worked her way down the line. Rosemary stuck her hand out dutifully when her time came. The jab of the scanner was unpleasant, but nothing to fuss over. Even though she knew there was nothing of interest in her blood, she couldn't help but sigh with relief when the Quellen passed her by. Something about these sapients made her feel awfully tense. Even though Rosemary couldn't read the Quellen's face, something about her changed when she scanned Corbin. Enforcer Bevel clearly saw it, too, as he beelined right for her. He looked at the scanner, and there was a brief flurry of unintelligible discussion between them. "Artist Corbin," Enforcer Bevel said. "Under Section 1764 of the Defense Genetic Integrity Agreement, I am placing you under arrest." "What?" cried Corbin. The other Quellen was already upon him, binding his hands with some sort of energy cord and pushing him towards the door. I haven't done anything." Ashby rushed forward. "Enforcer, what's..." Enforcer Bevel stopped him. "You all need to be questioned. We will hold you here. Interrogations will take place in an area of our choosing once we have completed our search of your vessel, the enforcer said. Under Section 352 of the Punitive Regulations Act, any request made for legal advice will be denied.
I'm sorry, what? Ashby said. The hell is going on?
Rosemary tried to stay calm. None of them had done anything, not to her knowledge, and if the Quellen hadn't figured out about her doctored ID file by now, she doubted they would at all. And as for Corbin, she couldn't think of anyone less likely to break the law. This had to be a misunderstanding.
You are not under arrest, Bevel said, nor are any charges being made against you at this time. Failure to comply in full with your interrogation officer will result in imprisonment.
Jenks glared.
The captain asked you a question. What did we do?
Jenks, don't, said Dr. Sheff. The other Quellen marched Corbin off the ship.
Ashby! He cried.
His feet dragged, but the Quellen pushed him forward.
Ashby! I didn't...
I know, Corbin, Ashby said. We'll get this sorted out. He turned back to Bevel, fuming. Rosemary had never seen him so angry.
Where are you taking him? What did he do?
Enforcer Bevel looked at Ashby with his flat, black eyes.
He exists.
They scanned his wrist patch and took his clothes. He had yelled himself raw, but none of them would speak to him. None of them were even speaking in clip. Their words clicked. Their eyes clicked. Their feet clicked when they hit the floor. It was like being in a metal insect hive. Dark, hot, humid, and always clicking, clicking, clicking. He didn't know how far he was from the Wayfarer. They'd moved him onto a different ship. Or maybe an orbiter. He couldn't say. There hadn't been any windows or view screens. Not that he'd seen, anyway. They'd shoved him into an enormous room, the size of a cargo carrier's belly. The floor was pockmarked with smooth, deep pits, twice as deep as he was tall. If he squinted hard enough, he could see the glitter of eyes staring back at him from within their depths. He tried to cover himself. The Quellen wore no clothes themselves, but then they had shells. They didn't need to be covered. They weren't made of soft flesh and hair and lines and creases and misshapen folds you'd rather keep to yourself. He wished he had a shell. He wished that he'd been born to a species with spikes or horns or anything more imposing than the fragile sack that he was. He wished the Quellen could be the ones who were afraid. They nudged him roughly towards an empty pit.
No, he said, trying to force the tremble out of his voice. Not until you've told me what I've done. I'm a GC citizen, and I have my...
Within seconds, he wished he'd said nothing. One of the Quellen grabbed him with its upper limbs, pinning him face out against its plated torso. Segmented limbs closed round his body like a wiry cage. The other Quellen lowered its face to the floor, flattening itself into a plank. Corbin hadn't noticed how thick the plating was at the top of their heads. A curved, blackish-blue dome, worn smooth and thick with old scratches. The Quellen charged him. The domed head rammed into his chest. Pain burst through him. He choked on his own breath, flecking the Quellen's domed head with spit. The Quellen did not seem to care. The thing backed up and ran forward again.
Oh no, please, not!
He heard his ribs crack before he registered the pain. He heard himself cry out before he realized who it was. He sagged against the Quellen's legs, but it held him upright. The second Quellen charged again. The Quellen holding him must have let him go at some point, because he found himself on the floor, retching and shaking. He could feel the fractured ribs stab every time his stomach heaved. Low moans escaped from his mouth, but were cut short as his lungs fought for air. They shoved him into the pit. He tumbled down the cold metal. His face hit the floor first. He felt blood spurt from his nose as it wrenched sideways. The Quellan, who had broken his bones, shouted to him and Clip, speaking 8 angry words. In the hours ahead, they would be all he could think of. "From now on, clone, you will be quiet."
Ashby was the last to return from the interrogation. He joined the others at the dinner table. Everyone looked exhausted. Even Ohan was there, curled up under a blanket on a nearby bench. Dr. Sheff had brought out a small batch of spring cakes. Nobody was eating them.
"Oh, stars," said Kizzy.
She ran over and hugged him round the waist.
"I thought you were getting locked up, too."
"I'm okay," he said.
"You've been gone 6 hours.
"Feels like longer." He slumped into his chair. Dr. Sheff placed a mug of mech in front of him. Ashby cupped his palms around it, letting the warmth bleed into his hands. He stared at nothing for a moment, took a deep breath, and looked to his crew. "Did any of you know?" A general shaking of heads.
"Not a clue," Jenks said, lighting his red reed pipe. The ash piles on the plate in front of him indicated that he'd gone through 2 bowls already.
"We've been debating whether or not Corbin knew," Sissek said.
"And?" Ashby said.
"We don't think so,"
Jenks said. Smoke leaked out from between his teeth. "Did you see his face when they dragged him away? He had no fucking idea what was going on."
"I checked an old blood test," Dr. Sheff said. "There's no question. There are some irregularities in his DNA that can't happen any other way."
"Why didn't you notice it before?" Ashby asked.
"Because it's the sort of thing you only find if you're specifically looking for it. I didn't have any reason to."
Ashby sighed and leaned back. "This doesn't change anything. I hope you all know that. Corbin's a sapient individual, and I don't particularly care where he came from. I know we all have our difficulties with him." He glanced at Sissex, who was picking at a spring cake with a single claw. "But he's part of our crew, and we have to help him."
He looked round the table. Something was off.
"Wait, where's Rosemary? Did she not come back?"
Had the Quellan figured out about her, too?
Stars, how many crew members was he going to lose today?
"No, she's in her office," Sissex said. "She's been combing through legal options for Corbin since the moment they let her go."
Ashby reminded himself to give Rosemary a raise once the tunnel was built.
"I'll go help her," he said, pushing his chair back.
"No need." Rosemary walked in through the kitchen, scrib in hand and pixel pen behind her ear. "But we've got a lot to talk about.
Let's hear it."
Rosemary took her place at the table.
"Corbin's being held at a nearby enforcement orbiter. They'll be keeping him there indefinitely before his case is processed."
"What happens then?"
"If we do nothing, he'll be sent to a Quellan penal colony. They're labor camps, mostly, from what I've learned. Apparently most of the Terracite ore in the GC is mined by Quellan prisoners."
"Now there's a happy thought," Jenks said. "Nice to know what my circuit panels are made from."
"How can they do that?" Dr. Sheff said. "Corbin's a GC citizen."
"No, he's not," Rosemary said.
"Since cloning is illegal in most GC territories, cloned individuals don't get natural-born rights. They have to go through the same application process that non-GC species do, even if they've lived in the GC all their lives."
"That's not fair," Kizzy said.
"Yeah," Jenks said. "But think of how rarely something like this happens. Lawmakers aren't going to trouble themselves making new legal systems for something that affects maybe, what, a few hundred people, if that? You can't find cloners anywhere but the fringe, and I highly doubt anybody who's a part of it comes back to the GC. This probably isn't something the GC has to deal with often."
"Exactly," Rosemary said. "And because of that, the unofficial policy when dealing with a discovered clone
is to default to whatever the local laws are. If we'd found out about Corbin in, say, Harmagian space, he'd still have to go through the application process, but the only other thing that would happen to him is a footnote on his ID file. The only person who'd be arrested is his father, which is probably happening as we speak.
Anybody know anything about his dad? Kizzy said.
He's still on the Enceladus orbiter, I think. They're not on speaking terms, Ashby said. He turned to Rosemary.
So, let me get this straight. Since Corbin's not a citizen, we can't use any of our treaty rights to get him back?
Right. But there is a loophole. It's just not... She cleared her throat. It's not exactly ideal.
I've figured as much.
Rosemary fidgeted with her pen. The terms of the Quellen's GC membership agreement state that they have to honor any legally binding documents that affect GC citizens traveling through their space. This is meant for cases like, say you have a human and a Harmagian who have a registered partnership in Harmagian space.
Ew,
said Kizzy.
Speciest, said Jenks.
I'm not a speciest, they're slimy.
It's just an example, said Rosemary. Now, they wouldn't be able to register their partnership with the Quellen because interspecies partnerships aren't recognized there. But since they're already registered in another GC territory, the Quellen have to honor their partnership, legally speaking.
How so? Ashby asked.
Like, if their ship crashed and one of them died, the Quellen authorities would have to recognize the other as their next of kin, even though they wouldn't grant those rights to people living within their space.
Got it.
But how does this help Corbin?
Well, when you start an application for GC citizenship, you have to have an assigned legal guardian throughout the process. A GC citizen who vouches for you.
Yes, I had to do that, Dr. Chef said.
How's it work? Jenks asked.
It's a formality more than anything. The idea is that you have someone there to help you fit in. They make sure you learn the language, learn the laws, understand the local culture and ethics, that sort of thing. They're also responsible for helping you get your form work in on time